Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. 5:45, we'll have our triple option feature. Steve Geller will join us. At 5:20, a little after, we'll have on with us our Odyssey NFL insider, Mark Schlereff, and talking about Saints. And he can talk a little bit about that game he did this weekend. Man. You had to need a heavy dose of coffee to watch that one with the Giants and the Commanders. And then at 7 o'clock, it'll be the Saints Hour with Mike Haas, voice of the Saints, along with Saints Executive Vice President, General Manager Mickey Loomis. And also to have a couple other guests, offensive lineman Brian Baldinger, former guy who's one of the breakdown specialists that if you're online, you can watch him do a lot of work. And also defensive end, former defensive end Chris Long, former first-round pick of the St. Louis Rams back then. And brother Kyle played offensive line, and you see him on TV now on the CBS network. So, man, that genetic pool, huh? Daddy Howie and Chris, defensive end, and Kyle playing offensive line. So they're the big lineman version of the Mannings, so to speak.
Yeah, good football blood.
To have dad and then two sons play at the highest level. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Joe in Mandeville. Joe, you're in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hello, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I got a question about the LSU defense. I mean, I know a lot of folks have questions about it, but I wanted to call and get your opinion because the mystery to the process for me is how the offense could make such a large rebound after the last regime left town. But we still are searching for answers on the defensive side. So I would just like your insight and your takeaway on that.
It's all about players. And what I see with LSU, they don't tackle well in the open field. You saw South Carolina, they had guys, after that initial contact, they break loose, they out in the middle of the field. Same thing happened against Nichols with Colin Guggenheim. You know, you got a couple guys sort of two-hand touch him, and all of a sudden he's off. You know, USC didn't run the football a lot. But, again, there's a talent sort of lacks area along the defensive line. I don't think there's any question about it. Now, Braden Swinson, I give him a lot of credit. Man, he came to play against South Carolina, had certainly a big impact as a pass rusher. You saw them a little bit. Every time Harold Perkins got close to the line of scrimmage, they were trying to either chip him with a back or a tight end. They were cognizant of Perkins coming off the edge. But I think what's disturbing to me is this is no longer DBU at corner, and up front, they're not as good. Got a lot of young guys, and they might be the answer to it, but what catches me so far is they're not real good as far as open field tackling, bringing a guy down that he doesn't turn a 4-yard run into a 64-yard run. And that's really puzzling to me, really is. I know Blake Baker's a really good coach. He's a real good defensive coordinator. But the effort is there, I think, certainly. And you see them make a few more plays than you saw the unit of a year ago. But they've just got marginally better. And a lot of that has to do with, I think for most people outside of Louisiana, they'd have a difficult time telling you who's the starting lineman for LSU. I remember talking to Marlon Favorite. They had 8 or 9 men in a rotation, and all 8 of those guys got a chance to play in the NFL. A couple of them first-round picks. You can't say that about this defensive line. So there's a talent level gap there along that defensive line with a lot of young players and guys that you got to say it. Brian Kelly has not hit in the transfer portal as far as defensive line's concerned. And I can say the same thing at cornerback. They brought in a lot of guys, but none of them have really turned out to be big-time players at all.
What did Coach Jenkins say when we had him on? It's like they lost bidding wars for guys in the portal, especially
on
the defensive line.
One to Oklahoma.
Yes.
And the other went to Miami or Florida.
And so, to your point, yes, they don't have the horses necessarily that they do offensively. At the same time, I would say this, is based off of what I heard from Coach Kelly, they're still optimistic, right? Like, the big plays against South Carolina is what really hurt them. Like, there were multiple runs of 60 plus yards, right?
Hey, you gotta tackle them. This ain't two hand touch.
Tackling, correct. To your open field tackling comment there, Mike, and you're 100% correct. If they can just get a little bit more technically sound, like, I know they may not have necessarily the talent that LSU defenses have had in years past, but I think if you can cut out some of those chunk plays, this LSU defense won't be elite by any stretch of the imagination, but it'll be at least decent, right? And so
it's better than a year ago.
Yes, but it's improved. But it's
how much better?
It's hard to be worse than it was last year.
You can't be worse.
And you have a couple tune-up games. Palermo came on with Tommy earlier and talked about this. You have a couple tune-up games with, you know, UCLA, who just got blown out by 30 by Indiana.
Okay, you thought a tune-up game was against Nichols, too.
Yes, but then you also have South Alabama, who, granted, just put up an 87 spot on, you know, Northwestern State.
Watch how you say that, Northwestern State. You know who's the co-host here.
No, I understand.
No, Bobby ain't too thrilled about that.
But you have those two games back-to-back, and then you have – so basically you have 3 weeks until your real big test against Ole Miss, who, you know, they're ranked number five for a reason. And we'll see how that goes, because Jackson Dart and that offense, Mike, it is scary.
Man, they can run the football, but it's the receivers.
He can sling it, too.
And what they've done on defense is impressive. Their defense, what are they able to acquire in the transfer portal, has really upgraded.
Two completely
upgraded.
Different visions, Mike, as far as Brian Kelly and Lane Kiffin. Brian Kelly wants to build through high school ranks. He's very adverse to using the transfer portal. Lane Kiffin's all about the portal. He wants the best players to come in. And
He wants the results. To win now.
Look at the results so far this year, Mike. Looks better?
Yeah,
just saying.
You got no argument with me on there. We'll be back, and we'll have on with this Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long in studio. And on our Oakwood Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, we're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
You got it. My pleasure. Good to be with you guys.
Mark, while you was, all excited watching that game, you were doing this Sunday with the Giants and the Commanders. Well, at least Jen Hale was happy at the end. She got to interview another one of those LSU Tigers, Jaden Daniels. But, the Saints, they took it to the Cowboys right off the bat, and they played smash-mouth football. I know basically every show we've done with you, you have talked about that is all the flash of the receivers and quarterbacks. And, yeah, I'd love to have the star quarterback. Anybody would. If you don't win up front, you're not winning squat in this league. Look at what the Saints did to play bully ball against the Cowboys. And I did a national show out in Los Angeles, and they said, when I told them about only 16 passes, they were like, it can't be right. I was like, no, I saw it. And now there was a lot of chunk plays in that 16 throws. But their ability to control the line of scrimmage was so crucial. And you see it now in what the Saints are trying to do offensively.
Yeah, well, you know, I did the first game against Carolina, and that was a bludgeoning as well. And you know, came on your guys' program and talked about how good the Saints were and how, you know, efficient I thought they were going to be last week on Breakfast Ball, the show I do here in New York on FS1. Talked about the Saints going into the Cowboys, and I thought they'd beat the Cowboys, and I was 100% right. They just beat them down. I mean, just forget about beating them. They beat them into submission. And you know, the thing about the Saints and the way they've been built, and this goes all the way back to Sean, you know, when Sean was there for the last 15 years before Dennis took over, is, man, we're going to build great lines of scrimmage, and we're going to beat you up physically. And that's exactly what they've done. And then I talked to you guys last week about this, man. Like, Derek Carr is back in the offense that he is most comfortable in, this West Coast offense, that he ran with the Raiders and John Gruden. But there's one big difference. In John Gruden's system, everything has a check, right? Everything can be checked out of, and it's all in the quarterback's plate. And as I travel around the National Football League, one of the things that drives me crazy is I sit down with a bunch of young coaches, and you know what I always hear? Oh, we got premium play here. We got a premium play. And one of the things they always do is they have multiple plays called, right? And so you're like, hey, man, we've got this premium play, and like, so we're going to run this play, but if they give us this look, we're going to check to this premium play. Like, if they give us, if we want to run to the safety or away, or maybe we want to run to what we call the bubble where a guard's uncovered, and that's going to be a premium play because we've got the best, you know. And I just roll my eyes. I roll my eyes because I'm like, you do realize when you're sitting in your stance in your haunches waiting for the look that you're looking for to change the play, and then the quarterback's got to come up there and go, hey, man, check, 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 check. Hey, you know, and whatever the call is, hey, green 14, green 14, you know, ta-da, whatever, right? And so instead of just coming off the ball and hunting, one, you're sitting in your stance being more passive, and then ultimately the only advantage I have as an offensive lineman is snap count. I'm playing against a guy who's as big and strong as I am, but he's more athletic than I am, right? And when you have everything in a premium package, meaning a check with me package or a can it package, where you've got two plays called and you're going to go to the one that gives you the best, what you think is the best matchup, what ends up happening is you can no longer use your snap count because you got to wait. So for me, what they do in New Orleans, and, you know, I talked to Clint Kubiak about it. I talked to Rick Dennison about it. Like, Rick is like, hey, man, he's a big-time run coordinator. He's a big-time O-line coach in this league for a long time. And he's like, let me tell you something. We've got a bunch of what we call tank plays or good against anything plays or whatever you – like, we're going to call it and run it. Now all of a sudden we're going to go, hey, 18 handoff force. It's good against every defense they put out there. There's not one defense we can't block up. So now you can go, hey, 18 handoff force on first down. Ready, break. You walk up to the huddle and you go, got it! And everybody takes off, right? And you catch the defense still motioning, still moving, still, you know, communicating. And now all of a sudden we're shortening necks, and all of a sudden, you know, Kamara's got a 14-yard run before anybody touches him. And that stuff is important, and nobody wants to do it anymore.
Nope.
And the Saints are doing it, and it's one of the reasons they're just absolutely destroying people.
Mark, I think I was talking to Bob about this since he retired, and I could say the same with you. Bob's got a few more years that he retired than you have, but all these offenses that have been put in, the defenses have had a counterplay for it and sort of stopped it. Now, again, sometimes when you got a quarterback like Mahomes or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow, they can do stuff just not the normal guy can do. The one offense they have not been able to really counter defensively is this Shanahan-Kubiak offense. And a lot of it has to do with the physicality of running the football. It is a lot of old-school stuff, but I don't get why more people aren't going to that. And we've seen all this spread offense and everything, and it's great, okay, for fantasy football. But if you want to win games, that's the one offense that defenses haven't really been able to stop very well.
Well, you know, listen, the thing about what they're doing, and I would say 60% of the teams run a variation of the Shanahan, maybe more than 60%, the Shanahan, you know, Kubiak type of offense. You know, you look in you know, all over the National Football League. I mean, it's all over. I mean, the Rams run it. The Niners run it. You know, I mean, it just goes on and on and on throughout the whole league. So there's a lot of teams that run kind of that's the root of it. And then it's depending upon, hey, do we want to do it out of 12 personnel, out of 11 personnel, or do we have 21 personnel? What do we base out of? All that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of variation to it. But the really good teams do a great job of not only running the ball, but more importantly, probably, or maybe not more importantly, but just as important is off that run, they have adjunct play action that marry identically to it. And so for a defense, you get a defense playing, you know, the pat or playing the run, and then you hit them with something that looks identical that they can't discern until it's too late. And that's where that offense gets you. You know, you think about wide receivers, you know, the X receiver just busting out and making big plays and being uncoverable. That's not how the Niners get all their yards. That's not how the Niners get all their explosive plays. Their explosive plays oftentimes are getting it to a receiver off a run look where the receiver catches it 8 yards away from the line of scrimmage, but there's nobody within 15 yards of him. And he's just off to the races. I mean, how many times have you seen that? Or yep. You see a guy like Juszczyk slip, you know, they're running ISO, and all of a sudden he comes barreling into the linebacker who's got him in man-to-man coverage, and the linebacker sits his hips, ready to take on the block, and Juszczyk goes right by him, and he's, you know, 15 yards behind him before the guy turns around and starts chasing him, and there's a 35-yard explosive. Like, that's how they get you, and that's why that offense is so good, because they know how to run the ball, and they totally understand the play action that's tied to that run.
Our Insider Calls with Mark Schlereth is brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Charlie?
Mark, I really enjoyed a video Brian Baldinger put on Twitter, his Baldy's Breakdowns, where he was talking about the Saints are a left-handed team, and he was really highlighting Lucas Patrick, the new left guard, the veteran journeyman that spent time with Green Bay and Chicago before he ended up in New Orleans, off to a great start with his tenure with the Black and Gold. But then also Taliese Fuaga, the rookie first-round pick that made that shift from right tackle to left tackle, and he's been awesome in those first two games as well. I was listening to some audio from Lucas Patrick, you know, earlier, and where he was asked about Tali, and he talked about, you know, not just the physicality, but the football IQ for such a young player. And he mentioned, you know, the screenplay, and if Tali doesn't notice something from the defensive line and communicate it with Lucas Patrick early on, then that touchdown to Kamara, the 57-yard, you know, explosive play like we've been talking about, doesn't happen. And so just your early thoughts on Taliese Fuaga and also Lucas Patrick, the left side of that offensive line. I mean, the offensive line in general has been really solid so far this year. It's been the biggest surprise by far. But just looking at what, you know, Taliese Fuaga has done early on in his career alongside with Lucas Patrick.
Man, Fuaga's a man out on that field.
He's been a beast.
He's a man.
Yeah, no, he is. There's no question. He's outstanding, and he was outstanding. You know, watching him as I prepped for that first game of the season against Carolina, I was like, wow, he's impressive. And the other thing is, you know, that guy, I watched him in college at Oregon State, and I thought, wow, this guy can really play. But he was all right tackle at that time.
Yeah.
So they flipped him at left tackle and just decided that's where he's going to be. And, you know, and Patrick was a guy that I thought was a good player. I didn't think he was the greatest player, but he's playing really good. Because you're sandwiched between a kid and this is not the only reason. He's a good player. But you're sandwiched between a kid at the left tackle position that has a chance to be like a superstar, and then by a center that I think is a really good player, right?
Yeah.
And I think right guard is a really good player. And then, you know, and then your right tackle
Trevor
is kind
Penning,
of the question.
Yeah.
And they're doing a really good job of protecting him, and they're running the ball, and they're giving him an opportunity to, you know, to put tools in his tool belt. And that's one of the most important things you can do. Like I always tell people, you know, you could ask me, you could give me all the greatest lumber in the world, and you say, hey, could you build me a deck? And then I'd be like, yeah, I can build you a deck. And then you give me a hammer and say, okay, go to it. Well, I can build you the deck, but you better not stand on it because you're going to fall. It's going to fall apart, right? I need a saw. I need nails. I need a level. I need, you know, a tape measure. And like, I need the tools to actually build you a stable deck. And because this offense, the way they're running the ball, the way they set up their play action off that run, you know, the way they use their screen and their bubble screen games, the way they use their backs out of backfield, they're giving that kid the tools to be successful and to build confidence. And let me just tell you, going back to him coming out of like Northern Iowa or wherever it was, I remember watching a bunch of stuff on the in the Senior Bowl about that kid. That kid was a dominant physical, like he was a dominant physical kind of character, and has is really good athletic skills. But somewhere along the way, with some injuries and some lack of confidence, you know, he got shaken a little bit. And so you give him the tools, like that guy can be a really top-notch offensive tackle in the league. And that's what they're doing right now from a play-calling standpoint. And Dennis Allen's got it going on, man. He's got it going on. And the Saints, like, make no bones about it. You know, the Saints are a damn good football team. And they're a lot of fun to watch, man. And they're going to be a problem for if they can stay healthy, which is everybody's issue in the league right now. But if they can stay healthy, they're going to be a big time problem for a bunch of teams.
Mark, final question: your thoughts on Jaden Daniels and watching him? I mean, the Giants, they did stop him from scoring touchdowns, but they got 7 field goals out of this. And I mean, I don't know how the hell you lose games the way the Giants do. But your thoughts on early look at Jaden Daniels in the NFL?
Well, they got in the red zone 4 times and they jumped off sides 4 times. So, like, that's not on Jaden Daniels. That's just stupidity by Washington, right? But I thought Jaden was really good. He is, you know, Dan Quinn called him a key card guy, first guy in the building all times. And he said he's got toughness, unbelievable toughness. He connects with all the players. He's got the humility of a young guy and the confidence of a vet. And those guys love playing with him. And I'm telling you what, he's a bright kid, a smart kid, already understands the game at a level that most quarterbacks in their third and fourth years don't understand. That kid, the sky's the limit, man. He was fun to talk to, and he played his butt off. And he took a shot in the ribs in that game where it was, I mean, a vicious, vicious shot. And I thought, like, I thought he broke his ribs. I thought, oh, God, this kid's not getting up. And he got up. It took a while. He got to the sideline. He missed one play, and he trotted right back in and finished that game. And that last drive for that final field goal to win the game, man, he threw the ball. He had a deep over route to Noah Brown that he completed that was beautiful. Took a couple sacks early, but as the game progressed, he did a much better job getting the ball out of his hand in the pocket, only scrambled when necessary. And one of the things I said about him, like in the open, is he needs to learn to when to scramble, not because he can, but because he has to. And I thought he did a good job of kind of figuring out when to scramble because I have to, as opposed to, hey, look how good an athlete I am. I'm just going to move around. And I thought he did that.
Marco, covering him at LSU, I can tell you, he reminds me of Gumby. I mean, you know, he's taking some shots here. And you say, how is he going to get up for that? And they would tell him, you got to slide it. You got to get out of bounds. Well, you know, he rarely did that at LSU. He thought he could make a big play every time he touched it. And I see some of that hasn't gotten out of him yet. But, man, what a special guy. One of the most humble athletes, superstar-wise, that I've ever been around. I mean, he just handles himself so much in a class kind of way. And what you said, Dan Quinn said, it's exactly what Brian Kelly told me about him. That, you know, yeah, he's first one in, the last one out, and I got to chase him out of here in this film room. Yeah. So, man, you'd love to see that from a young man. Mark, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Mark.
My pleasure. You guys be well.
All right. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. When we come back, it'll be triple option. Steve Geller will join us here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We're joined by Steve Geller, our triple option segment, and Steve and I were talking about this 60 years ago today. Man, Goldfinger. Man, who hasn't watched that on television? Sean Connery and Goldfinger got released in the movies. Man.
Always loved the name of the girls in all the movies that they came up with. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's the most watched Bond of any of the James Bond movies. It was Goldfinger. Steve, you first.
Guys, I'm going to pile on to poor little Bryce Young. He got blindsided on and off the field, apparently. NFL insider Jordan Schultz reported that Young was very shocked at the Panthers' decision to bench him at quarterback. Quote, it came out of nowhere, a source told Schultz. Now, this decision shouldn't be too much of a surprise. The Panthers are 0-2, and they're getting outscored, guys, 73-13. Young has just 245 passing yards in two games. No passing touchdowns, three interceptions, and his quarterback rating 44.1, the worst among starters. So, enter Andy Dalton. The guy can't catch a break. He's always there to be
a rifle.
He's always there to be a backup to somebody. Then ends up the starter.
How about that,
guys? Charlie? Real quick before I get to mine with Bryce Young, this is something that I didn't get to bring up yesterday when we did triple option. Bryce Young has a 9.1 QBR through these first two games. By the way, leading the NFL in QBR, Derek Carr with a 96.2. How about that?
We ain't getting all them calls and texts about, y'all, man, Derek Carr got to be on the bench.
So you go from Derek Carr at 96.2 all the way down to Bryce Young at 9.1. Guys, the second worst is Caleb Williams. And Caleb Williams, we would all agree, has gotten off to a brutal start to his career. 24.2.
Not accurate.
But 24.2, that's the gap between Caleb Williams, who's the second worst.
Where's Jaden in there?
Jaden's in the around 20. He's at 46.8 so far. But, I mean, Jaden's running capabilities have been well on display early on in his
career. I would
say. So, but, yeah, as far as just overall QBR so far, guys, Bryce Young hasn't just been the worst QB in football. He's been the worst by a pretty wide margin. So, ultimately, it's probably the right decision to bench him. But the optics of, you know, making this gigantic move up to number one overall to get your QB of the future,
right,
and then you just give him a terrible hand with organizational failures, with the amount of head coaches and different play callers he's dealt with.
To the owner himself, David Tepper.
Such a nice guy.
I do want to talk more about Bryce, but we'll get into that later. I'm going to stop rambling and get into my triple option segment. Steve, you sent this to me earlier. Our friends at D1 Baseball released their top transfer pitchers for the 2025 season. LSU's got a few of them, guys. If you're looking at as far as the top 85 list that was released today, the Tigers have five LSU pitchers in the top 16 of the ranking. Anthony Ianson, the pitcher from UC San Diego, is the number one overall transfer pitcher, and Jay Johnson went and scooped him up out of the portal. Chandler Dorsey came over from USF is number six. Zach Cowan from Wofford is number 11. Devin Sheeran, who came from Mount St. Mary's, a guy that was, you know, under-recruited, but then he just sprouted 6 inches in college, and now he's gigantic and dominant, is number 15. And then Jacob Myers from Nicholls State is number 16. So not only do they just have five of the top 85 transfer pitchers, they have five of the top 16. I think that the LSU pitching staff in 2025 is going to be pretty, pretty good, guys.
I would hope so. Guys, we talked about Goldfinger. 60 years ago today, get released at the movie theaters, but 57 years ago today, first regular season game ever for the New Orleans Saints.
Wow.
And on the first play, John Gilliam takes it back 94 yards for a touchdown. And, man, you thought, I know as a kid, they were 5-1 in the preseason. That's when they played six preseason games. Man, is it going to be this easy? Well, that was pretty much they had three high moments in 20 years. We had Dempsey's 63-yard field goal, and then Archie Manning on the first game he ever played, on the final play, scored against the Rams. Los Angeles Rams were really good on defense. They had the fearsome foursome, and they were able to win. So three plays, so to speak, in 20 years, but the first one, Gilliam's 94-yard touchdown run on the kickoff, and Dean Kleinsmith, he cleans up on this. Because the first actual play, Bruce Gossett, the kicker for the Rams, he kicks the ball out of bounds. So they move it back 5 yards, and then he kicks it to Gilliam. So, man, you know, I don't know how much money Dean's cleaned up on that, but that was actually the first play. But the first actual play, somebody touched the ball in a game, regular season game, John Gilliam, 94 yards. Man, John, and I told him the last time I saw him, man, he's cleaning up with this. He's going to all these card shows and autographing pictures and jerseys, you know, Saints stuff. And so 57 years ago today, and that was some bad football in them first 20 years. Man, boys, If we were doing sports talk, we'd have these lines lit up every day.
I was going to say, what was Saints fans like then just with the new franchise? Were they just
thrilled.
Excited? I was going to say.
Just thrilled that they had gotten an NFL franchise a year after the Falcons had gotten one, a year after the Dolphins had got one in Miami. And you could see Roselle's vision was, I want to go to the South. And it was really kind of started by the interest he saw in people's love of college football.
Right.
And his deal is, let me bring it down south.
Smart man.
And so that was the deal that, man, he said, it's going down there. And it was a kind of a deal with, you know, politicians in the state of Louisiana getting that antitrust law passed. And it's always a deal somewhere. And that's how the Saints got the franchise for New Orleans. So John Gilliam, first actual play, because actually the first play, Gossett kicks the ball out of bounds. But the first actual play, John Gilliam, 94 yards for a touchdown. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this play. We're finishing up here at hour number two of sports talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. Steve, you want to talk in a Cajun accent, it would be the two Cajuns if you'd like to. But I'm glad to see you in a good mood because I know you're a big Saints fan, but number two on the list, Philadelphia Eagles. Man, how many times can Nick Sirianni screw up a game? Early in the game, he doesn't go for the field goal. He kicked a field goal early in the game.
I was screaming and at the
back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long. We're joined by Steve Geller, our triple option segment. And Steve and I were talking about this 60 years ago today. Man, Goldfinger. Man, who hasn't watched that on television? Sean Connery and Goldfinger got released in the movies. Man.
Always loved the name of the girls in all the movies that they came up with. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's the most watched Bond of any of the James Bond movies. It was Goldfinger. Steve, you first.
Guys, I'm going to pile on to poor little Bryce Young. He got blindsided on and off the field, apparently. NFL insider Jordan Schultz reported that Young was very shocked at the Panthers' decision to bench him at quarterback. Quote, it came out of nowhere, Sos told Schultz. Now, this decision shouldn't be too much of a surprise. The Panthers are 0-2, and they're getting outscored, guys, 73-13. Young has just 245 passing yards in two games. No passing touchdowns, three interceptions, and his quarterback rating 44.1, the worst among starters. So, enter Andy Dalton. The guy can't catch a break. He's always there to be
a rifle.
He's always there to be a backup to somebody. Then ends up the starter.
How about that,
guys? Charlie? Real quick before I get to mine with Bryce Young, this is something that I didn't get to bring up yesterday when we did triple option. Bryce Young has a 9.1 QBR through these first two games. By the way, leading the NFL in QBR, Derek Carr with a 96.2. How about that?
We ain't getting all them calls and texts about, man, Derek Carr got to be on the bench.
So you go from Derek Carr at 96.2 all the way down to Bryce Young at 9.1. Oof. Guys, the second worst is Caleb Williams. And Caleb Williams, we would all agree, has gotten off to a brutal start to his career. 24.2.
Not accurate.
But 24.2, that's the gap between Caleb Williams, who's the second worst.
Where's Jaden in there?
Jaden's in the around 20. He's at 46.8 so far. But, I mean, Jaden's running capabilities have been well on display early on in his
career. I would
say. So, but, yeah, as far as just overall QBR so far, guys, Bryce Young hasn't just been the worst QB in football. He's been the worst by a pretty wide margin. So, ultimately, it's probably the right decision to bench him. But the optics of, you know, making this gigantic move up to number one overall to get your QB of the future,
right,
and then you just give him a terrible hand with organizational failures with the amount of head coaches and different play callers he's dealt with.
To the owner himself, David Tepper.
Such a nice guy.
I do want to talk more about Bryce, but we'll get into that later. I'm going to stop rambling and get into my triple option segment. Steve, you sent this to me earlier. Our friends at D1 Baseball released their top transfer pitchers for the 2025 season. LSU's got a few of them, guys. If you're looking at as far as the top 85 list that was released today, the Tigers have five LSU pitchers in the top 16 of the ranking. Anthony Ianson, the pitcher from UC San Diego, is the number one overall transfer pitcher, and Jay Johnson went and scooped him up out of the portal. Chandler Dorsey came over from USF is number six. Zach Cowan from Wofford is number 11. Devin Sheeran, who came from Mount St. Mary's, a guy that was, you know, under-recruited, but then he just sprouted 6 inches in college, and now he's gigantic and dominant, is number 15. And then Jacob Myers from Nicholls State is number 16. So not only do they just have five of the top 85 transfer pitchers, they have five of the top 16. I think that the LSU pitching staff in 2025 is going to be pretty, pretty good, guys.
I would hope so. Guys, we talked about Goldfinger. 60 years ago today, get released at the movie theaters. But 57 years ago today, first regular season game ever for the New Orleans Saints.
Wow.
And on the first play, John Gilliam takes it back 94 yards for a touchdown. And, man, you thought, I know as a kid, they were 5-1 in the preseason. That's when they played six preseason games. Man, is it going to be this easy? Well, that was pretty much they had three high moments in 20 years. We had Dempsey's 63-yard field goal, and then Archie Manning on the first game he ever played on the final play scored against the Rams. Los Angeles Rams were really good on defense. They had the fearsome foursome, and they were able to win. So three plays, so to speak, in 20 years, but the first one, Gilliam's 94-yard touchdown run on the kickoff, and Dean Kleinschmidt, he cleans up on this because the first actual play, Bruce Gossett, the kicker for the Rams, he kicks the ball out of bounds. So they move it back 5 yards, and then he kicks it to Gilliam. So, man, you know, I don't know how much money Dean's cleaned up on that, but that was actually the first play. But the first actual play, somebody touched the ball in a game. Regular season game, John Gilliam, 94 yards. Man, John, and I told him the last time I saw him, man, he's cleaning up with this. He's going to all these card shows and autographing pictures and jerseys, you know, Saints stuff. And so 57 years ago today, and that was some bad football in them first 20 years. Man, boys, if we were doing sports talk, we'd have these lines lit up every day.
I was going to say, what was Saints fans like then just with the new franchise? Were
they
just
thrilled.
Excited? I was
going to
say.
Just thrilled that they had gotten an NFL franchise a year after the Falcons had gotten one, a year after the Dolphins had got one in Miami. And you could see Roselle's vision was, I want to go to the South. And it was really kind of started by the interest he saw in people's love of college football.
Right.
And his deal is, let me bring it down south.
Smart man.
And so that was the deal that, man, he said, it's going down there. And it was a kind of a deal with, you know, politicians in the state of Louisiana getting that antitrust law passed. And it's always a deal somewhere. And that's how the Saints got the franchise for New Orleans. So John Gilliam, first actual play, because actually the first play, Gossett kicks the ball out of bounds. But the first actual play, John Gilliam, 94 yards for a touchdown. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this play. We're finishing up here at hour number two of sports talk on the Big 870. Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. Steve, you want to talk in a Cajun accent, it would be the two Cajuns if you'd like to. But I'm glad to see you in a good mood because I know you're a big Saints fan, but number two on the list, Philadelphia Eagles. Man, how many times
can
Nick Sirianni screw up a game? Early in the game, he doesn't go for the field goal. He kicked a field goal early in the game.
I was screaming
and
at the
take
TV
points,
for sure.
And then at the end, oh, my God. He's lost seven of his last nine games as an Eagles coach. Yeah, I know one thing. Jeffrey Lurie ain't got that much patience.
One thing I know, too, looks like the Saints will be able to run all day on that Eagles front. They did not look impressive.
You know, I think back to Nolan Smith when he came out of Georgia. He was supposed to be the big pass rusher. In 2 years, he's had one sack.
Huh.
One.
Maybe there was a reason he fell in the draft.
Yeah, he's skinny. He's a real skinny dude. He gets pushed around. I see the big guys just kind of mash him a little bit. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.